Welcome to the Ada Bible Church Beyond the Weekend podcast, where we debrief the sermon, focusing on extra points of connection and what there just wasn't time for in the message. We hope this podcast will encourage you to study God's word and grow your relationship with Him. You'll appreciate the conversation most if you've already heard the weekend sermon, and you can find that link in the show notes. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Beyond the Weekend podcast. Well, hello. Thank you for joining us today for a new season of the Beyond the Weekend podcast. We're excited to jump into this new series, Confident. My name is Amelia Rhodes, Director of Discipleship Resources for the church. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Stephen Lewis, Pastor of Spiritual Formation. Welcome back, Stephen. So Aaron had a fun opener with these AI, real, not real. And this big conversation at our house was, how many did you get right?
Well, let's see. There were three, right? There was the dog, the fire, and the cheeseburger.
Yes.
I think I got all three right.
I don't believe you.
I think I did.
That's amazing. I only got
but
one.
But I also want to go on record, since Aaron is my boss, that I for sure think he was dunking in real life and skydiving. So
it was so funny. One of my young adults got all of them right as well. So you must be in with the young crowd. You got them all right. And then the other young adult in my house was like, we should make the skydiving one come true for Aaron. Oh, so
I'm willing to go.
Staff outing.
Yeah. Maybe we should do like a Beyond the Weekend podcast while we're skydiving. I don't know if we could get the tech issues figured out for that.
I don't know that the church insurance would cover that. So
I think we would get some, like if we did that for the You Ask For It series, you would get some real honest answers while falling at whatever speed you're going through the sky.
Oh my. Well, we have a fun conversation planned for you today with some rabbit trails like that a little bit. No, it's good to be here. And so as we jump into this sermon, we have a fun guest today, actually, Sam Schubkegel. Did I say his last name right?
I think you did. Okay. Yeah.
I feel like I always get it wrong. Sam's joining us today, our young adult director. So we're going to have a great conversation about apologetics and our young adults and recapping the sermon. And so excited to hear what he has to say. And we talked about things like John, the background of John, and how it's always good to go back and remember who wrote these books and why. And even he was like, I'd forgotten some of this stuff about John. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into some of John's history, what happened to the other apostles. Aaron mentioned that the rest of them were martyred, and you shared a little bit of like some of what that was.
And I bought a new book.
And you bought a new book that you're very excited to share that you bought this morning. So, and then we talked a little bit about Gnosticism. So you'll have to stay tuned for what that is. Gnosticism, modern Gnosticism, how that relates to this book and some of our young adults. And in that conversation is a very fascinating conversation about AI and some of how that relates to our world and our culture, and even how we can use 1 John and really evaluate what we should and shouldn't be doing in this world. And then we talked about apologetics, which we could have talked for like 2 hours.
I know.
We could have like a 3-hour podcast.
I brought a big book for apologetics and we didn't even talk about it.
No, maybe we can get to that at the end.
Okay.
So stick around to the end, because then we will talk about a couple extra resources we didn't get to. And there was a whole sermon section that Aaron cut, and he messaged us this morning and he's like, oh, I'm so sad I can't be there today. Make sure you mention if you can these parts that I cut. So we'll share that at the end as well. But before we jump into this conversation with Sam, why don't you give us a quick recap of the points of the sermon?
Yeah, I think, you know, the series is Confident, and it's about how we can have a confident faith. And Aaron's 4 points were about God reached down and just how significant that is, because all the other faiths in the world and really belief systems are us reaching up to heaven or to God or the divine or whatever it is, and how God. And then the second part is that the way he reached down was by entering history, and how it's not debated that there was a Jesus who lived in the first century in Israel. That's just, it's like a fact. We have more evidence for that than basically anything else. And then some of that evidence is the third point, the disciples' testimony, right? And this is where we talked about how they all end up dead.
You know,
spoiler alert,
the
story ends up with the disciples all being killed for their faith except John. And then the fourth part about that is just God is personal, and how we can know him, we can have a relationship. And that's what John wanted for the people he was writing to. And that's what God wants for us. And just how, you know, if we ask God, he will reveal himself. to us.
And I think the thesis for John's letter, this epistle, is so you can know. Like the whole theme of it, so you can know, so we can know. So let's listen in on this conversation with Sam. Well, hey, Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks
for joining us. We're really excited for everyone to get to know you today and for this conversation. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your role in the church, any fun fact, but also how many of Aaron's AI photos, real, not real, did you get right?
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, starting there, I got them all wrong except for the campfire. So
no.
All wrong except one. Yeah, I
that
did.
That was me too.
Yeah, yeah. Burger got me. A lot of them got me. And I played along with my wife. And so it was like, okay, you're going to get this one. I've been on staff for 4 years now. And my specialty or my focus is young adults. So at Ada Bible, that's college, 20s, 30s. I get to spend a lot of time there. And then my family, a little bit about me in that world. I've been married for 7 years. We have 3 kids, 3, 2, and 1 years old. And so this is a summer where we get to say, yeah, 3, 2, 1, blast off. Anytime they ask how old our kids
are. Is that how it actually goes? Blast off sometimes too?
Yes, honestly. Yeah, that's very accurate. That's very accurate. Steven's my boss here. So before I came on, I've never done the whole podcast thing. Am I supposed to look at cameras? Am I supposed to? Is this audio?
It doesn't matter.
It's both.
I don't know. Podcasts really evolved. Like what it means, you know, it's like, you can watch a podcast now. What?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just threw in a ChatGPT, hey, doing a podcast with my boss, how can I impress him? So I'll try to use big words. I feel underprepared. I have like one journal here. You guys have more than me.
I think you asked me, am I supposed to know what happened in 1100? I'm like, it's okay. It's
fine. I did. I was like, I don't, what's my role here? So excited to be here.
Yeah.
Excited to get into the content and
We're excited to have you here. You've been, you came in as a groups guy, young adults, right? Now you're leading our young adult ministry and doing a great job. And just doing a, I mean, I was able to go to, I think, 4 of the young adult worship gatherings and got to hear you teach and see you lead there. And just really, really excited about what God's doing through young adults at Ada Bible.
Yeah.
It's a great ministry. I had the joy of doing a devotional. You invited me in to do a devotional this past year and be on the panel and just love that community and have gotten to know some of them and see your leadership. So we're really grateful.
You started becoming a regular. You came a few times in a row. Like, where's Amelia? Like, I'm like, this isn't like her full-time thing, you know? Like, she just comes. And
it's a lot of fun. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. So we had a great sermon this weekend. We started this new series on confident. Yeah. And we thought we brought you in because this is such a big topic that you've talked about in young adults, and apologetics is big among your community as well. So we want to just give a little bit of extra things that didn't make the sermon and discuss a little bit and get some of your perspective as well from our young adults. But when we enter a book like this, it's always helpful to know, this is where we always start, like, what did it mean to them? Like, who was it written to? Who was it written by and why? And so I thought it'd be a great place for us to jump in to some things that Aaron didn't have time to go deep into. It's kind of who wrote this book and why. So let's start with John, because he's a really fascinating character. And we actually know a lot about John from the Bible and some from church history as well and church tradition. So let's see, who was John, the author of this book, and some facts that we all like know about him.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I didn't bring much to this conversation, but I bulleted a couple things here. And so, you know, thinking about John, who he is, disciple of John the Baptist, meets Jesus, follows him. One of the fishermen who Jesus calls to follow him, a son of Zebedee, known as one of the sons of thunder, if you're familiar with that.
Like, if you're going to have a nickname.
That's a great one.
That is not a bad nickname.
Oh, not at all. And growing up playing video games, I want to play that character.
That's right, too.
I want those abilities, whatever that is. Like,
so, okay, this is off topic, but I was at a baseball game this weekend, and somehow the field I was sitting up next to had, like, the electrical, like, transformer next to me.
Oh yeah.
And every time a baseball hit it, I thought it should explode because that's what would happen in a video game.
Oh, and then the ball would be like supercharged.
Yeah.
It'd be a special ability.
And I just
kind of like a power up.
Like, well, I just expected it to explode when a baseball hit it, but it didn't happen in real life.
Oh, I think John got that nickname with his brother because they wanted to call down fire. Like this town that was a Samaritan town that wasn't accepting Jesus.
And
do you want us to like call down fire?
Yeah. And just the faith of that, like, this is a thing we can do. Like, you know, is that our task right now? So yeah, John, one of Jesus's inner three, Jesus had three who are kind of his inner circle. John got to see Jesus transfigured, one of the first to see the empty tomb and believe. He was a prominent leader in the church in Jerusalem, a pastor in Ephesus, as Aaron talked about. According to early church tradition, John lived longer than the other apostles, He died of natural causes, so not one of the martyrs, we think, in Ephesus around 98 to 100 AD during the reign of Emperor Trajan. When I write the things down like this and I sit with you guys, I'm like, I shouldn't even go for it. Why? It's a T-R-A-J-A-N.
It might be Trajan.
Trajan.
Yeah.
Sounds like the
Trojan. No silent J on that.
Trojan.
Probably not a silent J. Oh,
not like the Trojan horse.
Yeah. Oh, okay. unlike other apostles who were martyred, John's, he's believed to have been one of the only to die peacefully in old age. So that's kind of nice. And then one last thing I've got bulleted here is just church tradition holds that he was exiled to an island of Patmos during the emperor. Oh my goodness. Can you pronounce this for me? Domitian?
That
Domitian,
right.
Yeah.
Man, this is why I'm on the podcast right here.
I pronounce all the names.
During this reign of persecution for that emperor, where he likely wrote the book of Revelation. Aaron talked about the different books he wrote. Then he later returned to Ephesus. And that's where we think he was ministering.
Yeah.
And he would have written the Gospel of John and then 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John there too. So.
And so like when you think of like John's resume, and this is the eyewitness testimony that we have.
Yeah.
One of the things that Aaron said, you know, for the reasons of our faith, like front row seat. And John, more than many of the other apostles, even super front row seat to things that the others didn't get to see. Like you said, the transfiguration and like in the, not, I don't know how many others went to the tomb.
Right. Yeah. That's not secondhand.
No, like saw it with his own eyes.
So I forget this stuff. You know, I think you said, Sam, share some things we all know about John. I forget that. And I know it now. You know, you might have to remind me in a month, like, wait, Ephesus, where was he? The emperor, so good to revisit that and remember, okay, this was the context.
Yeah.
You know, this is the reality of what's going on here. That's
real
important.
People, real places. And that reminder, I love that you said, we forget.
Oh, yeah.
We have to go back all the time to these that sometimes might feel like basics or why do I have to remind myself again, but so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
That. And one of my favorite things about John is, so in the gospel, there's this person reference who is referred to as the disciple Jesus loved.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks it's John. And
wait, I thought it was John.
Yeah, it is. And that's my point is he.
Oh, good.
He called.
I thought you were about to like blow our minds. I was like,
no,
dude, it's Peter. I'm like, no way. No. This is breaking news to me. This is awesome. Okay. Sorry, go on.
No, it's just that like, if I were to write a book about my life with Jesus.
Yeah.
If like choosing to write it as like the person Jesus loved, I think it's just the amazing way to capture who Jesus is and what he thinks about us. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about like child of God and adopted into his family and things like that. And here John is owning that identity and writing himself into the story, into that identity.
And the confidence in that, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like, I'm the one Jesus loves. You know, it's like, oh, a little cocky there. Like he's like, he knows it. You know, he's not afraid to say it and own that and live into it.
And I think too, of knowing where he came from sons of thunder to his identity being like the one that Jesus loves.
Yeah, it's like that's delicate, much more delicate than sons of thunder.
It's powerful.
Yeah. And the church tradition, now it's a little bit of a later tradition, but has that John was, Domitian tried to boil him alive.
Domitian.
In a pot of oil, supposedly, he actually was miraculously saved. And then Domitian just exiled him as like a, well, if I can't kill you, I'll send you away to Patmos type of thing. Now, it's a little bit later, and you never know what to do with these church tradition things, but it's from, I think, Tertullian, who is like the next generation after John. So it's not like
not
500 years later.
Yeah. Someone didn't wake up like, oh, did you ever hear? And it's like, wait, we've never heard that. Like time has passed. Like,
so if we think about John, okay, who he was, his time with Jesus, and that he's the last living disciple when he writes this letter, he would have seen her. Now they don't have social media. They didn't have the internet. So I don't know how much he might have known through the news, but I would imagine that he heard eventually what had happened to his friends.
Yeah.
Like that, when I really sit with that, just breaks my heart to think he was the last living one and he probably heard at some point in time what happened to Peter and James and all of them, yet didn't recant Jesus, didn't deny him in the face of maybe being boiled alive even. So what do we know about the other apostles? Because that was one of the things that Aaron gave us, their testimony, and that they didn't recant. Yeah. And I think you picked up a book even just this morning.
Yeah. Well, Aaron and I were talking about this last week, and I, you know, you can get so much like you remember things from classes you've taken, but you can't always find the information, mm-hmm. or at least me, maybe some people always remember the things. But so I knew a few things about some of the apostles. And obviously we know Paul travels, you know, to Rome and around the northeastern part of the Mediterranean Sea. And those are all accounted in Acts. You have some of Peter's travels accounted as well. And then you just have all these other what might have happened things. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is there are churches built on the site of that supposedly house apostles' remains today. Now you can believe it, you can't. I'm a little skeptical of it sometimes. So there's like St. Peter's in Rome, which mm-hmm. is where Peter's supposed to be buried. Mm-hmm. And so I've been to three of these. I don't know how many there are. I should like keep a list and see if I can check them all off. But there's St. Peter's in Rome. There's St. Mark's in Venice. And supposedly Mark didn't go to Venice, but he was somewhere in Muslim lands, and they smuggled his remains, like they like exhumed him, smuggled his remains out of a barrel labeled pork, and the Muslims left it alone because it's pork's an unclean meat.
Wait, that's like a cartoon.
That's the story of how they got his remains in Venice. And then there's actually St. Thomas's in Chennai, India. And so
you're saying like their bones.
Yeah, their actual bones
are in the ground under these buildings.
Supposedly. Okay. You know, and whether you buy it or not, I don't know.
I do. Why not?
But St. Thomas's is in Chennai, and it's traditionally believed that Thomas went to India. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a group of Christians there called Thomas Christians, I think. Mm-hmm. And they trace their roots back to Thomas's missionary journey. And so you have these different accounts. I did pick up a book. It's called After Acts. It's by a guy by the name of Brian Lifton, Litfin, actually. And I haven't had a chance to read it yet. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm hoping to be able to get through it this summer because it does talk through kind of like, okay, here's what we think happened. Here's where the tradition happened. Here's where it might start moving into legend type status. Mm-hmm. But Eusebius, who's writing around 290, so late third century. So like, if you think about it, the time from essentially the American War of Independence to now. Right. And we think of 3 years, it's a long time, but we also have pretty good confidence about what happened, you know, with Washington and all those people. So this is a time period Eusebius is writing afterward. And he talks about how Thomas goes to Scythia, which would be the, like the Russian steppes, which would be modern Russia, Ukraine, and Kazakhstan, which as possible. And Andrew went to Asia, which is actually more Turkey-ish. Mm-hmm. John also went to Asia. And then Peter went to Pontus, Galatia, Bithynia, Cappadocia, and Asia. And it talks about how Peter specifically went to the Jews there. And then in Rome, where he was crucified upside down, that because he didn't want to suffer the same way Jesus did. And then, of course, Paul went, you know, everywhere that we have accounted for in the Book of Acts, but then also the church tradition says he was martyred in Rome under Nero. Mm. And you know, if you've been to many weekend services, you've heard us talk about kind of Nero and how he blames the Christians for the fire of Rome as mm-hmm. well. So there are different accounts of what happened, but everybody's pretty confident that they did not die happy deaths.
And it's interesting when you think there are things we know in the Bible, but then church history and mm-hmm. non-church history even giving accounts, you know, that show what happened outside of this. And this is why we offered an A to Bible Academy class once on church history. I used to think, why does that matter, all of that old stuff? And then as I've gone through seminary, and Sam, I know you're in seminary too, yep. these things you learn like, oh, this really does impact our faith mm-hmm. and matter, what happened in the Bible and then what happened right after. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, super interesting. Well, the other, you know, Aaron started out the sermon by talking about AI kind of as a joke, haha. But that really right, yeah. is a huge topic for us in our world today and is going to become, I think, even more so as believers, different elements of AI and how it impacts our faith. And this is where I think the letter from John in 1 John, the elements in there of what he's teaching to the challenges they faced in their day, the struggles they were facing, what was dividing them as believers. And Aaron said, he wrote because there was a segment that had broken off to mm-hmm. a false teaching. And so much of the New Testament talks about false teaching, not something that we talk about often, but it matters because it still happens today. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some things that we're going to see in our culture, even more. And one of the things that John may have been writing, you know, against was Gnosticism, which is another one of these big words. But it's important to know, because in the early church, if not in New Testament times, shortly after, it's this line of thinking that comes forward. And I know we have a little bit of a definition here of Gnosticism, but I think it's important to know. When you want to explain what Gnosticism is, and then we can talk a little bit about how that kind of relates.
That's the one that starts with a G.
It does.
Just, you know, for everyone listening, Gnosticism. Yeah. So if you're going to Google that, yeah, Gnosticism.
Yeah, that's what it is. Gnosticism is what it looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, so it seems all throughout people's thinking about like the physical world and the spiritual world. Just when you look at any kind of religion, there's always a group of people who would look at kind of the brokenness of the world, and where Christianity explains the brokenness through sin. Mm-hmm. Other people might explain the brokenness through just the physical realm itself is evil or has something wrong with it. So you see this in some Eastern religions. You start to see it in Gnosticism. It picks up, and it is probably what, like you could say a proto-Gnosticism maybe even is mm-hmm. what a lot of the New Testament writers are talking about. And that's why they emphasize like the physical resurrection.
Yeah.
And that's why you have things like Thomas actually touching, you know, be like Jesus offering Thomas to touch him, like, no, I'm real, right? And so that Jesus eats, he goes and eats on the seashore. Mm-hmm. That's apparently hard to say. he goes and eats on the seashore with his disciples and cooks them food and things like that. So you have Jesus as a real person, and Christianity preserves the goodness of the physical realm and the creation. Mm-hmm. And so Gnosticism has this like secret knowledge. It's very big on a like secret type of knowledge that essentially will free you from the physical world. There are different versions of it, so it's hard to be like, this is exactly the thing of it, but secret knowledge will free you from the spiritual world is so much more important than the physical mm-hmm. world. Mm-hmm. And whereas Christianity would say, we are physical beings. God created us as physical beings. We have a spiritual component as part of our physical, but you can't separate one from the other necessarily. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth that we all live on as physical beings.
And that's what mm-hmm. you see in the first part of 1 John 1. You almost have all the five senses, but we saw, we heard, we touched very physical things. And as you were saying all of that, this just rings so true of so many conversations I've heard about AI and transhumanism, where there is a very, very strong belief today in culture and those who are really doing the research and some segments of AI study of the physical is bad and it's weak. And we can overcome that and we can replace it with technology and we can, I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but we're not that far away from having to make challenging decisions of, you and I were just talking, what's the difference between getting a knee replacement to make my knee work the way it should again versus becoming a superhuman? Mm-hmm. Because we can replace parts. And so mm-hmm. I know AI is top of mind and you and I have talked mm-hmm. about it. How do you see that in our young adult community, AI impacting our faith and our world and things maybe we need to focus on more than ever before?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, AI is like here to stay. Like we all know that, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't feel like the new kid on the block, even if it's like, oh, AI is so great. It's like, yeah, it's kind of just here. You know, it's kind of in everything. If you're in school, you're using AI. If you're working, mm-hmm. if you're living, you know, more or less, you're using AI. Like more or less.
You might
if
even
you're
use like, it, you don't me. Even know. Like you Google anything now and the first result is an AI generated result. It's not even an actual result.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it almost feels like the question of like, oh, should we use it? Or it's kind of like, well, we are. You know, it feels like the question's already so quickly shifted, you know, from like, oh, should we use it to like, well, we are using it. So how do we use it? And how do we think about it? And I mean, I'll say like even texting, if you look at Apple's latest iOS update, they do a really good job of offering AI interaction where you'll get a text from a friend and it'll say, hey, here's some things we suggest. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like any of those and you write your own, it'll say, hey, would you like to change the tone up? You know, and be a little more friendly, a little more. So can be super helpful. Also can make us even more skeptical of, am I texting this person and kind of what's the contents of their heart or their mind or their thoughts, or is everything being kind of filtered mm-hmm. through, you know, whatever AI thinks and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like a dynamic, you know, I've joked with some people who are 19, 18, 19, who say, I don't send a single text without AI. And I'm like, is that true?
Yeah.
I was, okay.
I was, my son has one of those like lockdown smartphone, dumb phone things where it looks like a smartphone, but he can only do certain things. He's 14.
Yeah.
We're trying to, you know, progress him in technology, but one of the apps that he could add was like an AI mental health chat bot.
Oh yeah,
that's a big thing.
And it was like, I will text your son and see how he's doing and to encourage him. And I'm like, now that terrifies me a little bit. And I'm not
AI
even
is incredibly encouraging. I mean, ChatGPT, like, you get on there, they're like, this is a brilliant idea. I love that you're asking me this. And I'm like, why do I feel so firm? That is true. But I've heard of that too, even with young adults. So I'll sit with it and they'll go, well, you know, I could think of maybe if they're struggling with bipolar or different things. And they'll just say to me, hey, AI said I should leave my small group. I kind of told them what was going on. You know, and I'm like, interesting. Okay, let's talk about that, you know, or like... Yep. Yeah, those kind of, you can have like a buddy in AI. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
So that brings up a point that you had talked about, you know, offline when we were chatting of fellowship. So Aaron made this point about God as personal. And one of the things that we have is fellowship with God and fellowship with other believers and the importance of real fellowship and connection with other believers is becoming more and more important.
Yeah, probably more important, probably more rare kind of in public spaces. Mm-hmm. If someday, like in the... like far off history, there was like a town square with a tavern and like everybody gathered all the time. Like, I feel like those are physically dwindling, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe there's like a mall, but I don't know if we can count that as like a really active, like social.
Not really, no.
My kids like to go there to like go on a slide and like once or twice. But, and so as that space kind of dwindles in the public sphere, online space rises, totally, I would say, especially when we think about church and community, that's only going to become more important, you know? And even if you look kind of what studies are showing in terms of, hey, what is millennials or Gen Z, what are they really looking for in a church? Every year we see an increase of relationship, relationship. Yes, we want good teaching. Yes, we need these other parts. But when I talk to young adults here, I'll talk to them and some of them kind of confessionally will say, yeah, I went to the bar every night because I'm looking to meet someone. And they don't tell me in a way generally of, because I love the bar. It's more because I don't know where else to go, you know, like, and so as we, as I hear those things, I'm like, oh man, as a church community, you can come here, you know, every week, wonderful ways you can engage in community. It's not an AI chat bot.
Yeah.
It's not superficial somewhere where there's drugs and alcohol and it's relatively unsafe, you know, but that we'd have safe space here. That's real and tangible, not cyber. I think that's increasingly important.
Yeah. Place where you can serve and use your gifts and be known and be in community. And that's one reason why we talk about small groups so much.
I mean, even Pastor Aaron this weekend talked about, if you want to know God's real, serve and get with people who believe, you know, and you'll have a better picture of it. But also it just gives you a place for community. You know, the word ecclesia, which is the word for church, means gathering or community, you know, like a gathering of people. And so you really can't church virtually because you're not gathering, you know, and that's a key component of it. And so that's what we try to do with young adults, right? We're doing monthly gatherings. We even call them gatherings. You know, we also have some other like gatherings that happen at our campuses on a regular basis where we're just trying to build these communities. We have the, of course, we have our weekly services and, you know it can be easy to walk in and walk out and not connect with anybody, but there are just opportunities for that, whether it's through a serving, you know, whether it's hospitality team or Discovery Village team or our Lifeline team does a great job with their volunteers building community there. And so there are just all these great opportunities to jump into church community, which it is a safer community, you know, and a great place to be known and to know other people.
Well, the other thing that Aaron really hit on is apologetics. He didn't use that word, but it's that defending of the faith and using intellect and reason. And we saw that with, you know, talking about manuscript evidence. And Sam, I know apologetics is a big topic among young adults these days. You've mentioned that. What are you seeing in our young adult population?
Yeah, it is a big topic. And depending on what your Instagram feed has on it, in a lot of spaces, like, you know, on Instagram, there's a lot of apologists who are blown up and going viral, and it's kind of fun. And apologetics, for some reason, to me, has like, I get a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know why. I feel of like, I'm going to like argue and show you.
It could be the tone of some apologists.
Maybe it was just like immature, like Sam, who like was like, I'm an apologist as a 16-year-old. And I was like, I'm just going to like show you how you're wrong. Because that's not what it has to be, you know? And so I can be super relational. But I'll tell you one story of a young man I got to sit with this past year who walked into our church on two different Sundays. I got connected with him and said, tell me your story. And basically his story was, yeah, I found these two apologists on YouTube who sparked my curiosity for God. I live with five guys who don't know Jesus. I'm a senior in college. And I just gave my life to Jesus in my bedroom.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And then I Googled church and I came here. And now I'm sitting with you and I'm like, I love it. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Like, you know, so we think about apologetics. Sometimes it might feel like, okay, you want to like spark an argument. And other times it's just people who are faithful to show we don't believe in God because a 2,000-year-old book plus tells us to. Really, first and foremost, I'd say we believe in God because we see the logos, the order in creation. We experience him in love and morality. And that sparks a curiosity then. You go, I think there's something bigger. And then when someone is willing to go and embrace apologetics and speak the truth about who that God is, you come to find out, oh, it's the Christian God. You know, it is that God. And you can have that whole debate, obviously. But yeah, stories like that and apologetics not being a buzzword for young adults, you know, even for me, it kind of is. So I was born in 96 and I kind of identify as a zillennial. I feel like I'm in the middle. Like when I look, I mean, I'll Google it. I'm like, what am I? You know, tell me AI.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. I feel like a millennial, but Gen Z in different ways. So I'll just say our generation. I don't think apologetics is a bad word or anything like that. I think they like it.
I think you're right. Like generationally, I think for mine, it was because it was seen as debate and arguing and we're going to try and argue someone into faith, but genuinely asking questions and listening and with thoughtful reason.
Yeah.
That's so powerful. What a great story.
And you mentioned like somebody getting saved through YouTube, but Christians have been using the like popular form of media for forever to do this type of stuff. Like, you know, Justin Martyr, who's like 100 to 165, he writes the first apology. He actually calls it called the first apology. I also think he also wrote second apology.
Like 100 years after Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like right away. Like,
well, that's 70 years after Jesus. Oh, you know, he might've been 100 years when he was writing it, when he was born. Right. And then we already talked about Tertullian, who is from Tunisia. And he wrote stuff like that. Tertullian was a little skeptical of philosophy. So he more leaned into like evidence and what happened with Jesus. And then Origen, Alexandria, Augustine in Algeria. And then you go all the way through, you know, you're up to like 1,100 now. You got Anselm, who's, you know, you'll have to look these things up and it's hard to understand, but the ontological argument was Anselm's big thing. And then Thomas Aquinas, he has five proofs in Summa Theologica that he does for, you know, and then you go William Paley, who, if you ever heard of like the watchmaker analogy, like, hey, if you found a watch in a field, you'd assume, boy, this watch just didn't appear here. Somebody designed it, right? That was William Paley's thing. And then Pascal, who lived in the 1600s, he had Pascal's wager, which was like, okay, let's just say we don't know, but if there's a possibility there's a God and there's a possibility there's not a God, and life living like there's a God actually makes people happier in general anyway, and living like there isn't a God tends to lead you into like the selfishness, and then there's a possibility there's an eternal world on this side, and there, and the only risk on this side is there's no eternal reward. Like the betting man, the smart man, the wise person would take the wager of the God.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that was Pascal's big thing too. And then of course you have like Lewis and Schaeffer and Plantinga, who kind of, I think maybe started at Calvin, and of course the late Tim Keller too wrote Reason for God. And I mean, I guess I say all that to say like apologetics done in the right tone, you know, is a part of, a huge part of Christianity.
Totally.
And it always has been.
Tone probably changes for generation. You know, I think we're in a generation where in a negative way, I've heard the term like, oh, you're a snowflake generation, or you're a, you know, and it's like, I think there's some truth in like, we are a generally sensitive generation, you know, emotionally, and like, and so apologetics maybe should look different. We have different vehicles for it, social media, and a different tone. And so even if it's like, oh, it used to be this tone, I don't even know if that's bad, because maybe that tone was the tone it needed to be, you know, back in the day. But just a couple of stats. Yeah, I studied econ in undergrad and I like numbers. And one reason I think, you know, apologetics has always been important to the Christian faith, but I think for this generation specifically, as far as we can tell from what we've, you know, studied in the numbers, 4% of Gen Z has a biblical worldview. But 44% of Gen Z would say they're extremely curious about Jesus and the Bible. So when you think about a young person who comes into church, hears something exciting about Jesus, they're going to have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
They don't come in with the worldview of like, oh, and here's where it fits and how it integrates with this hard question. And so making space for those questions intentionally and relationally, I think is critical as we invite people into the kingdom of heaven who are in their 20s or even younger than that, you know.
And that's what you're doing with A to Bible Young Adults. We had this great panel of, you know, where we took their questions and we tried to answer the best we can. You do that regularly and through your teachings, your devotionals. So tell us, as we wrap up this segment, what young adults in our community can engage with this summer? How can they participate in your ministry? What kind of things do you have going on for them?
Yeah, totally. So summer in Michigan, I mean, we get outside, right? Like you have a few months where it's like, let's go get sunburn and let's like enjoy cold drinks because we're not cold. And so a lot of it's social this summer. So every Sunday at the East Paris campus from 12:15 to 2:30 p.m., if you're listening and you're like, how do I connect? I'm a young adult, or you want to tell someone about it. We're going to just be outside grilling, enjoying cold drinks, playing yard games. So super social. Meet a lot of fun people that way. So that'll be every Sunday in June. And then the best way to connect with us is online, social media, on the website. And so I can tell you all the things.
Will it be a chat, AI chatbot responding to
role? Will it be you?
I thought about that though. I'm like, other people are doing it. It could be. Give them a cool name, biblical name. I don't know what we could come up with. But so really go online, find the other ways. Because we'll do things like a beach night and then an outdoor worship gathering. And then we kind of lock into the indoor worship gathering, prayer, teaching come September. So summer, super social, a great time to come and kind of dip your toe in the water. If you're like, hey, don't have Christian community. Mm-hmm. Like maybe you're listening, you're like, I resonate with that. I don't really have a great online community. I don't know where to go. That's what summer's all about here, is building that fellowship, being intentional with that. We could throw a word around like Christian friendship. And to me, it feels like, oh, maybe that's kind of like a weak term. Like, oh, you're doing Christian friendship. It's like, that might be the most important thing you invest in your life is Christian friendship. Like it's not weak. Mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of need the biblical worldview to understand the power of that. So.
Well, thanks for the great work you're doing. Thanks for joining us today and sharing some of your story and for the work you're doing with our young adults. And it's been fun to be part of that and to work with you. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was so much fun. I love working with Sam and he brings so much energy.
It's probably the most energy we've had from a guest on the podcast so far.
All the time. It's so great. And what a great community he is leading. Just have loved getting to know them, like I said.
I'm excited to see what God does through our A to Bible Young Adults community this fall. And, you know, it's Sam, but he also has just this incredibly bought in group of volunteers. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like, I think he tells them, it's like, hey, this volunteer position is like a 5 to 15 hour part-time job. Yeah. And they do it. They show up and they put in the work. And so it's not just, you know, just Sam, it's his incredible group of key volunteers doing it too.
So dedicated. And I have come into work in the morning at 8 and they're leaving from their early morning meetings. So it's just really great. We love what God's doing there. And so, you know, we had some parts that we didn't get to even in our conversation with Sam, and Aaron messaged us today about something that he cut on the fly during the sermon, I think on Saturday night, because he realized he was running out of time. And that was just even more evidence about why we can trust the New Testament and that this was real. And so I'm going to run through that real quick. And then I think you've got some other things too about a manuscript.
Always more things, Amelia. Always more things.
So many more things. But the archaeology is really fascinating. And he just didn't have time for any of that. So in addition to the writings and the manuscript evidence, there's evidence in the ground that we're continually finding. And you and I have both been to Israel, and Aaron as well. And one of the things I remembered when I was there was the excitement of our guide, who just keeps telling us about new things that they've found in the ground, names and dates and locations that just keep proving real people, real places, real history. Yeah. And Aaron had a couple of those related to Jesus in the Gospels. One of them was the Pilate stone that was discovered in the 1960s. And it had this inscription about Pontius Pilate, which verifies that he was a real person who presided over Judea during the time of Jesus and oversaw Jesus' crucifixion. So that was a significant one.
Yeah, I mean, so kind of to frame this, you have this period of time where people are really questioning the veracity of the New Testament. And they're like, well, there's nothing about Pilate and there's nothing about this. And the word David hasn't popped up in archaeology yet. And then you just have people keep digging and literally digging, you know, and they're finding all these things, the more tells and the more sites they're coming in. So if the 1960s, there was nothing other than the New Testament to prove that Pilate existed until the 1960s. Somebody found it in the 1960s.
It's wild to think how recent that is. Then there was another one. I'm going to totally butcher this name. Johannes Foot.
I think there's another O in there, but you're close enough.
Johannes Foot, maybe.
I have no idea either.
We can maybe spell it out on the show notes. But he was a first century Jew who was crucified by the Romans. And you can still see the nail in his foot. Mm-hmm. And this is just proof of crucifixion. It was real and it happened, and even how they crucified. So that was an interesting one. And then another one that didn't actually make his draft, but we had talked through during the week, was the Caiaphas ossuary, which is a bone box that they believe contains the bones of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that presided over Jesus' crucifixion. And there's all these names listed on there, but the timing is right. And of course, now with DNA testing, you can tell it was a 60-year-old man. And so just fascinating, again, proving this person was real. The time frame was right. And then there's all the excavation sites, which you and I got to see some of those when we were on these different trips to Israel. Mm-hmm. Capernaum, where Jesus spent so much time, Peter's house.
Yeah, it's right there.
Like right next to the synagogue where Jesus mm-hmm. would have stood up and taught.
Yeah, there's a spot where if you're standing in that synagogue, you're standing, I think, in the second or third century level. And then they have excavated like a little corner. It's maybe like 5 feet by 5 feet, 10. I'm bad with sizes, but 10 feet by 10 feet. And you can actually see the floor of the synagogue that Jesus stood on.
Mm-hmm. I can't even put words around what it's like to see some of these things and even stand there and realize, no, this matches what I've read mm-hmm. my whole life in the Bible.
Yep.
And another fascinating one was the Pool of Siloam, which they didn't find until 2004. Again, we just keep digging and right. finding things. And prior to this, people thought this pool that's mentioned in the Gospels where Jesus sent a blind man to go wash and be healed, they thought, you know, well, we haven't found this. It's not real. Just proof that like the New Testament's not real. The Gospels are made up. And then one day they're, you know, doing some work on water pipes for the Temple Mount and they're digging and then they find this pool. And when I was there, they were still actively digging. And I've got this great picture of their flinging dirt. It's a picture of like the pool and what they've mm-hmm. dug so far and our guide talking, and behind them, there's just like this stream of dirt, this active dig site. It was just so cool to be part of. But again, real people, real places, real events. It's a faith we can be confident in.
Yeah. And the second way you can be, so like you're talking about like archaeological, like physical archaeological things that point to names. And there was a time period, early 20th century, late 19th century, where it was texts were kind of like the key thing, mm-hmm. like actual biblical texts. And there are some crazy stories about how people found these different texts. Like one guy found them. He was at a monastery somewhere and they were starting fires in the kitchen with them. And he realized what they were. And one account is that he just took them and ran. And another account is that he asked for permission and they let him go. But he's been known as the thief ever since then. So I'll let you guess at which account is true. But I mean, they were starting fires in their kitchen with him and he did preserve them. But one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to text is this little fragment from the book of John. It's called mm-hmm. P52. P stands for papyrus. That's the type of paper it was written on. It was produced out of Egypt. You might have made papyrus like in elementary school, even, you know, like in those make paper type things. But I'm looking at, by the way, if you're watching along, I'm looking at my Baker Encyclopedia of Christian Apologetics by Norman Geisler, who I did have a class with him as well. He's gone now, but it talks about P52. And this account says that it dates to the first half of the second century. So probably it puts it at 117 to 138. Now there's some, of course, dating old things is very hard to do, mm-hmm. but it belongs to the John Rylands Library in Manchester, England. So I think you might even be able to see it if you go there. It was found in Egypt. But what's crazy about it is it's a piece of paper, a fragment of this papyrus, but they know it was part of a book because it has text on the front and the back. Mm. And in fact, it's the front portion is John 18 verses 31 through 33, and the back portions are verses 37 through 38. And so it's what would fit on the standard size. So they think it was from a copy of the Gospel of John, but it's so early, you know, they date the Gospel of John for anywhere from like 60 to 90 AD. And if this was and 115-ish, 130-ish, you know, this copy found in Egypt somewhere is like 50 to 60 years after the first one John ever wrote, which is just
so early.
Crazy to me. You know, just nuts that we have a copy of a sheet of the New Testament from that mm-hmm. early. And it's a, you know, clearly a sheet with the front and the back too, which is just, I don't know. It just is like,
it shows to me that this is God's word.
Right.
He's protecting it. He's providing all of this evidence. And when we saw the chart that Aaron put on the screen, you know, during the sermon, mm-hmm. so many people went back and screenshotted it or took pictures yeah. of it. We don't doubt Homer. We don't doubt Plato. We don't, you know, ever try and, is it accurate? We have so much more evidence yeah. and things like that. It's just mind blowing. So
it's, yeah, there's so much. I actually have a book here and it's one of the most boring books I've ever read, but it's, so I'm sure everybody's rushing out to get it right now, but it's called The Text of the New Testament by Kurt and Barbara Aland. And really it just walks you through, you know, the first half you can read more of. And then the second half is like in this text, and here's where it came from. And here's what it was found. And, you know, and it, there's a book about the, where they found all the, you know, in the types of texts involved in the New Testament. There's that many of them.
The scholarship into it is so deep. People have dedicated their lives,
yes.
you know, to studying this and being accurate. Well, something that's not as old and maybe a little more modern and maybe not as boring is one that I read. We talked a lot about AI. I just want to mention this book called AI Shepherds and Electric Sheep. I know that AI can be overwhelming and how does it relate to our world and what's real and not real and mm-hmm. how do we respond as Christians? We talked about that a little bit with Sam. This gives a good, really accessible history of AI, how we can respond as Christians, what we don't need to be afraid of, but then also the importance of spiritual practices that are physical, grounded in our real world, things like community that we talked about, cooking a meal together, sharing mm-hmm. how that's a spiritual practice. And so just want to encourage everyone, this is something that we need to know about. How do we respond and how do we live as believers with a confident faith in a world of AI?
I mean, I haven't read that book yet, but I remember you read it and you were like, this book is so good.
Yeah.
And so I might add it to my book list.
I like reading more
about like what happened before and then knowing how AI is going to take over the world.
It does have some history. So you'll like that part. It's okay, got a little bit of history in there too. Well, as we wrap up this episode, we've got 4 more weeks of this series. Really excited. The upcoming week, what can we look forward to that Aaron has for us?
Yeah, he's going to, you know, we're in a series about confidence. So he's going to talk about how we can know for a Christian, mm-hmm. essentially. And I don't want to give it away too much. I will just say the title is The Character Test. And we're going to stay in 1 John chapters 1 and chapters 2. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for something to read this week, as we head into the weekend, 1 John chapters 1 and 2.
And then a couple other things that Aaron encouraged us for action steps throughout this series is to read the Gospel of John. So read maybe 1 John mm-hmm. and the Gospel of John. One chapter a day, you'd get through it in the whole month or listen to it when you're in the car. And then also that prayer that he prayed that we ended with, I think is a great way to end our episode too. And just that open-handed prayer of God, make yourself real. I know I will pray this sometimes and be like, oh, I'm sorry, God, that I have to ask again and that I'm still doubting or wondering. And every time it's like, God's like, I'm here. Like, it's okay to ask. It's okay to admit where we're doubting and struggling and be like, God, will you make yourself real? So as we close today, I just pray that God will make himself real to you and you will know that this week. So thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the A to Bible Church Beyond the Weekend podcast. We pray this conversation was helpful and encourages you throughout the week as you seek God's help to grow in his word. You can find all resources mentioned in this episode in the show notes, including a link to this week's sermon and the current sermon series. We hope you'll join us next time for the Beyond the Weekend podcast.